From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
This destructive cycle of intervention and chaos must finally, folks, come to an end. Come to an end.
That was then-President-elect Donald Trump in December of last year, as he reiterated a campaign promise he had made to put an end to the U.S. policy of regime change.
We will stop racing to topple foreign... And you understand this. Foreign regimes that we know nothing about, that we shouldn't be involved with. Instead, our focus must be on defeating terrorism and destroying ISIS. And we will. Any nation that shares these goals will be our partner in this mission.
It may have taken 7.5 months, but it appears that the Trump administration may be moving in that direction in Syria. For more on that, we spoke with strategic analyst Mark Sloboda, who's also a senior lecturer in international relations at Moscow State University. Maybe you could explain to our listeners, this announcement from the Trump administration of essentially a change in policy towards the backing of some of the armed, quote-unquote, rebels, the jihadis that are running around in Syria.
Yeah, this is very big and not very big in different ways. Let me first explain why it's not very big. It's not very, very big. It's not going to have a huge effect on the battlefield as it is now. The reason for that is, one, before Trump even took office, Obama was winding down. This is the term that's used, winding down support for the rebels. This happened as more and more, as the rebels that the U.S. was supporting became more and more obviously and openly affiliated with al-Qaeda and the other jihadis in Syria. And this became under greater scrutiny. It is extremely difficult to find any U.S.-backed insurgent group, and there are supposedly 80-some such vetted groups, and this is not counting the Syrian Democratic Forces, the Kurds. We're talking only Sunni Arab rebel groups. We're talking the Free Syrian Armies and others. And the Free Syrian Army is not really an army. This is just a branding term used to describe and there's no organizational military structure that has any effective military control. It's more a political leadership that is just supported by the U.S. and then doles out certain amounts of money and weapons to different groups.
It's not free. It's not Syrian. It's not an army. But otherwise, it's a perfectly descriptive term.
I didn't want to say that exactly, but since you went ahead and said it, I would concur with that exactly.
Right.
And when we say it's not Syrian, meaning that, well, first of all, it's funded from abroad, and second of all, a significant number of the members of the different militant bands that make up what is called the Free Syrian Army are not actually Syrian. Right. They are jihadis and Islamists from across the region and some of them from across the world. He was already supposedly winding down this program. You can go back to the summer of 2015 and see the reporting on this program by the CIA. Now, it has to be said that there are two different support programs for Sunni Arab groups by the U.S. in Syria. One is the CIA program.
Right,
the other is the Pentagon's Train and Equip program,
right,
which by all accounts, first of all, it was much more public. Second of all, it was much less successful, in large part due that it required much more strict vetting of who it gave them to. And it also seems that there was probably some pushback from the Pentagon. They, at least at some level, at different levels, they did not want to be training jihadis. And there was at least one incident in Jordan, right across from this Al-Tanf base on the Syrian Jordan border, special forces that were purposed to the CIA to train troops at this base were killed by those they were training when they went full jihadi and suicide bombed themselves and took a number of American special forces lives with them, which I think, you know, gives a pretty good credence to the Pentagon's problem with training these jihadis. Right. So at various times we've heard estimates of how many Syrian rebels, moderate rebels, of course, that this Pentagon managed to reply. At one point, they questioning at the Senate, the Pentagon official responsible replied that it was four or five. Literally four or five rebels. That's how many they trained.
And how much was that again? What was the bill for that?
Yeah, that was looking at there were two separate portions of the train and equip program, both of them coming to about $500 million a year. So that was a cold billion just for the Pentagon program
so,
a year.
So about $200 million per person. Yeah. They must be some tough soldiers, boy. Let me tell you.
It must be said that at a slightly later date, they then said that some 200 had been trained, except that those almost entirely immediately disappeared as soon as they went across the border into Syria. Right. Some of them were captured. Some of them directly went over to Nusra, that is, as it was known, as Al-Qaeda was known at the time in Syria, right, and handed over their weapons and the cash they had and whatever. Right. And at least some of them were just outright killed when they refused to go along with everyone else, I guess.
Yeah, and some of them just went to the bank and cashed their checks. Yeah. I mean,
but it was a complete embarrassment and fiasco.
Yeah.
And like I said, there is every possibility that the Pentagon may have actually intended it to fail.
Right.
Now, the CIA had an altogether different program, and there was very little said about it. It was always said, we're training the rebels, we're training the rebels. But when any questions were asked about it, we're arming the rebels. You know, the U.S. made this clear whenever they said Assad must go. And we're talking Obama here and his officials. Mm-hmm. The CIA program, much less was said about it. It was more covert, although obviously not completely covert. But in the summer of 2015, there was, whether it was a leak or a intentional leak to the Washington Post, of an article that detailed the CIA program, while in the headline mentioning that the funding to it was being cut. So obviously this had continued for some time before that.
Yeah, right.
And they were specifically referring to funding of $1 billion a year for the CIA program.
Wow.
Of course, we don't know what it really was, and right, were there other such programs, but the CIA, other people may have been running, we don't know. But we know so then that at least the Obama administration was spending some $2 billion a year at one point, at least, to train rebels. And according to this, was a much successful program, probably due to the fact that it had much less strict vetting than the Pentagon program. And they, in this article, it purported that they had trained at least some 10,000 rebels.
Jesus.
10,000. And that is that was only at a midpoint. That was up to that date, so we don't know. And again, we don't know if there were other such programs. So, and we presume they were all armed. And it mentioned, of course, that they were all salaried. And yes, you heard that right. You, yeah, U.S. taxpayer,
yep,
were paying militants that almost universally were allied with Al-Qaeda and right, other jihadis, many of them jihadis themselves. The best thing that you can really say about any of these fighters on the ground is that they were Islamists. Mm-hmm. If you want to try and militant Islamists, sectarian Sunni Islamists, if you want to try and draw a line between militant sectarian Islamists and jihadis, you know, Salafist jihadis. That's a really thin line, right, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, these are militant jihadis that blow up stuff in Damascus, as opposed to militants that blow up stuff in New York or whatever.
York, but well, I said that's a really gray line, and I haven't.
It's a target package. Whatever's in the envelope today is what you blow up, right?
I have not had a single member of the think tanks or, you know, the media or the activists that support this that can tell me what that line is, where one group is only sectarian militant Islamist and not jihadi, and one is jihadi and not sectarian militant. I've never been able to they quite often use the terms interchangeably themselves.
Well, for that, you know,
when
for
they
that
object
matter
to you using it.
Yeah, but for that matter, you're right. But for, I mean, for that matter, from what do they call the, what do you call it? What's the term of art the U.S. uses for the moderate rebels? Where's that line between moderate rebels and jihadis also?
Well, we at various times we've heard institutions and the U.S. government refer to the openly Salafist jihadi group that whose leader idolized the Taliban as their role model, who were once part of Al-Qaeda, had a number of Al-Qaeda members, and has repeatedly held meetings to rejoin with Al-Qaeda. Evidently, egos and some other things got in the way. These openly supported by Saudi Arabia and Turkey. And they're still in Idlib right now. They're trying to present to Har al-Sham as the moderate jihadis. You know, that is ongoing to this point. You know, for most of the fighting, most of the last 6 years of conflict, you know, Har al-Sham and Al-Qaeda have fought arm in arm. Right now, they are fighting each other. Right. And it seems that at least at some level, the Saudi-Qatari conflict might be behind that.
Right.
But right now, at least ostensibly, they're having a fight over whether to raise the black jihadi flag over jihadi Islam, or to raise the green two-star Syrian rebel flag.
Right.
To brand the jihadis.
Right. It's over logo.
It's a little bit more than a logo, because one flag the media could go with and you know, present the report, oh, they're reformed jihadis. They're for Syrian rebel. They're not rebels. They went against the jihadis. So the branding is significant in how these people, who are all jihadis, can be presented to the West. But also, it must be said, you know, lines of control, egos, and lines of supply, because and rent, because each of these groups own territory and the resources, such as they are, that are produced there, and who funds which, and so on. But right now, it's jihadi on jihadi murder porn.
You know, if you do the M&A section of any Wall Street firm, though, when you have merger discussions, these are exactly the kinds of issues that come up, you know, even if you're merging, say, Burger King and McDonald's, you know.
They've occasionally had squabbles before. It seems somewhat more serious this time. It is jihadi on jihadi murder porn, you know. Hashtag pass the popcorn. Get some applause, sit down, enjoy the show. As long as they're killing each other in Idlib while the Syrian army mops up elsewhere, eventually they'll have to be gotten to. Next week they may be back together. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, and you know, paralleling this, of course, you mentioned that you had the CIA-backed rebels, quote-unquote, and the Pentagon-backed rebels, quote unquote. They've been shooting at each other too from time to time.
Oh yeah, and that's the CIA-backed Sunni Arabs fighting the Pentagon-backed Kurds, which is an entirely different issue. The so-called Syrian Democratic Forces, which are the YPG, you know, the Kurdish anarcho-Marxists, as funny as that all
know,
is.
Right.
A few token Sunni Arab tribes from northeast Syria thrown in simply because they didn't really fit in anywhere else. I mean, that was the Pentagon fighting a proxy war in Syria against the CIA. It's insane, absolutely incoherent policy, you know, as is the whole idea of being allied with the Kurds when your other allies, Turkey and Iraq, are not too happy about that. But this is what it was. And the Kurds were the most effective fighters, particularly in urban combat on the ground, and they were secular. And the Pentagon simply got along with much better with secular Kurds, you know, leftish, even if they were leftish, than with jihadis, you know, right. Islamists of whatever stripe. And it has to be said that of the CIA 10,000 plus, they also all disappeared, right? They disappeared mostly into the ranks of Al-Qaeda or Arhar, whatever. And right now it's going under the acronym HTS, Tahrir al-Sham. Or Ahrar al-Sham, or Jaish al-Islam, or the Turkestan Islamic Party, whoever they eventually joined, they all essentially disappeared into the jihadis' ranks as well. And one of the U.S. vetted groups, Al-Zinki, most well known for its members who filmed themselves brutally chopping off the head of a young boy. They filmed themselves and then posted it online because they thought it was good propaganda for them. I mean, not only that they did it, and that's probably not at all why the U.S. stopped supporting them in the end, but they got caught doing it because they were stupid enough to film themselves doing it and post it online. Not that they haven't done it before. And at one point, I think it was Kirby, it was a State Department spokesman, said that chopping off one head, but one beheading, does not make someone a jihadi. And that's good to know. The next time I'm in the U.S., if I just chop off one person's head,
I'm not
that's not enough to consider me a jihadi. No one actually followed up with the question, well, have they chopped off other people's heads? Obvious answer is yes. They looked like they were pretty familiar with what was going on.
They had the technique down.
Yeah, they looked like they had the technique. Anyway, they completely joined Al-Qaeda. They just up as a man and joined Al-Qaeda, made public pronouncements about it. That was a large, whole, complete U.S.-backed faction that just openly joined Al-Qaeda. Not we're just allied with them and operationally on the battlefield. Not it just embedded with them and being the designated toe holders, basically. They openly, politically, as a man, walked up and joined Al-Qaeda. Although in the last few days, evidently, they have now left again to draw closer to the Al-Qaeda splinter group, Ahrar al-Sham, the other jihadis. And then supposedly this might make them better people, I guess, or something. More moderate jihadis.
So let's back out for a minute and contextualize some of this. So, all right, we've got this policy. I mean, the shenanigans, you want to call mass murder and war crimes shenanigans, that have been taking place since about February of 2011, with the U.S. Directing this war, proxy war, and multifaceted.
Let's point out to our viewers that not only have these rebels that the U.S. backed been allied with Al-Qaeda from the very beginning.
Right.
Groups that the U.S. government says, whatever they call themselves, are Al-Qaeda. It was Al-Nusra. Right. It was something else. Now it's HTS, but they've always said that it's Al-Qaeda. But these rebels, up until as late as December of 2014, were also openly allied with ISIS.
Right.
And when East Aleppo fell because it wasn't some uprising from within. It was attacked from without, and the rebels were very upset about that. They said that the inhabitants of East Aleppo would have to be punished for not joining the revolution of their own will.
Right.
This was the U.S.-backed Free Syrian Army, Al-Qaeda, as Al-Nusra as it was known, and ISIS. And they were all hand-in-hand back then.
That's right.
And the last alliance that was openly signed, right, on paper – with the FSA, the Free Syrian Army, the U.S.-backed, and ISIS was December 2014.
Yeah.
Now, after that, they had some bitter battles. ISIS got too big. The FSA felt threatened. They were no longer politically, it was no longer kosher to be seen with them. But, these groups have been instrumentally together from the very beginning. Right. As soon as the U.S., I know they later regretted it, designated al-Nusra, the Al-Qaeda, as a terrorist group, The U.S.-backed, you know, and arranged Syrian National Council, this veneer of exiles that were supposed to be brought back in to then take over Syria. They said they refused openly. They said we refused to recognize al-Nusra at the time as terrorists.
Wow.
They're our allies. They're our brothers. That was from the very beginning. That's very public. There's no question about it. So
there's no question about the identity of these players, basically. So you've got this war that's been, you know, conducted by the U.S. through these various proxies, who we know are essentially the same people that blew up the World Trade Center, that were supposedly fighting this war against terror against, instead of
in Iraq, Afghanistan, in Libya, etc. Well, in Libya, the same thing. We were supporting some of them before,
and providing air force for them. So
the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group, which were again openly Al Qaeda affiliated.
So we end up here.
By 2015, right. Obama was starting supposedly to wind down the support for this program.
Right.
By late 2016, he was at least actually winding it down, because it was already clear at this point that the Russian involvement, along with the Iranian involvement and others, had swung things clearly in Damascus's favor. Mm-hmm. What rebels were left were no longer even presentable as something moderate. And Obama was supposedly winding this down already, although enough toes were still being shipped in, whether they were being shipped by the U.S. directly or out of Saudi stores, you know, provided to the U.S. from Saudi Arabia, remains unclear. But some of these rebels still have tow weapons, advanced U.S. anti-tank weapons out there, and undoubtedly will continue to have them for some time. But when Trump took office, almost immediately there was the very quiet notice that the Free Syrian Army and these other groups, we're not talking about the Kurds now, but the Syrian Democratic Forces, but just these Sunni Arabs, their supplies, their arming, their salaries, training, was being put on pause.
Right.
That was right away, as soon as he took office. And then there was some contradictory statements for a while about whether that was started up again, whether it was only half started up, whether it wasn't started up. Now, all of this was being supplied out of what are called, literally, the acronym they use is MOM centers, MOMs, going to MOMs.
Right.
And this is where they would pick up their paychecks, their weapons, and where new recruits were trained. And most of these were in Turkey. There was one of them in Jordan as well. And that's what they called these. And supposedly, when Trump came in, the gravy train, at least from the U.S. at the MOM centers, stopped. Mm. Now, this gravy train, as far as we know, is all still continuing from Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey, Kuwait, the UAE, and others that are still, as far as we know, funding the rebels. Now, how this Saudi-Qatari relationship, how much money is going to them while those are fighting each other, that is unclear. I don't know whether that has changed. I have not heard any definitive word. I think we would probably find out pretty quick, because they'd be running out of ammunition. They wouldn't be getting paid, and their numbers would be dropping because of that. And we haven't necessarily seen any of that, at least in Idlib. But now, the Trump administration, bucking its own deep state into a great amount of fury from the Democrats, from the neocons, McCain,
from
Western media, almost to the last journalist that reports on such things, is condemning Trump for stopping the illegal arming, training, and salarying of sectarian militants and jihadis allied and embedded with Al Qaeda, because that's what Putin wants.
Yeah, I mean, they're saying that Putin won. That's how they're presenting it.
That's it. Putin won, right? Putin won. Trump gave Putin what he wanted, and it's just unbelievable. I mean, you just surrendered this to Putin? I think, Don, we should continue illegally arming, training, and salarying sectarian militants allied and embedded with Al Qaeda, just to spite Putin.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Not only that.
Oh, sure. Right. I mean, strengthening Al-Qaeda, and inevitably, I mean, has been demonstrated numerous times.
It's really insane.
The money and weapons supply. Also, some of it went to ISIS even recently, because a lot of the rebels would then trade their own weapons and so on. There was tithes paid to Al-Qaeda or Ahrar al-Sham or whoever controlled, because these were always much larger than the U.S. vetted groups. They paid tithes in weapons and money, basically to be allowed to survive within the larger jihadi hordes.
Right.
We should continue.
We're getting close to.
That was sarcastic.
No, I understand. Yeah, of course it is.
I'm just making it clear.
No, it's so here.
But that's the argument that Democrats.
No, I understand.
Like,
that's
Democratic
what they're making.
Congressman Ted Lieu,
right,
is putting forward.
Yeah.
Right. Thomas Friedman openly said, not only Al-Qaeda, he openly said that we should support territorial ISIS.
Yeah.
To confront Russia and Iran in Syria.
Yeah. Well, this is the same group.
This is the New York Times.
I understand. And we're talking about the same group that's been taking credit for blowing up, Paris, shooting people up, running them over, London, wherever. This is the same ISIS, and they're saying, yeah, well, we should actually allow them to grow, thrive, continue, and just sort of aim them at Russia. That's, that's the strategy that brought us these groups in the first place, because that's what
exactly.
they did in Afghanistan in 1970s.
Late 1970s, early 80s. That was Brzezinski.
That's right.
He may be dead, but his policies of arming jihadis, against the Soviet Union, now against Russia, and other countries, continue to this day. And after what happened in Afghanistan resulted in the Taliban and Al Qaeda, and this happened in Yemen as well.
Yep.
And it's happened, the disaster in Iraq. The destruction of Libya with these same policies, now Syria, resulting in terror attacks across Europe, repeatedly in London and now in Berlin, where there were never such attacks before, in France, in Russia, all across the region. And, people are, they're furious now that money is being stopped to these people, these jihadis, because that's what Putin wants.
Let's take this. We're getting close to the end here, and I want to try to focus this some on the policy change. So we're seeing, we've seen a number of indicia of the Trump administration changing direction on these things. We saw a promise early in the campaign when he really started to get traction, talking about no more regime change, that these policies were no good. The policy in Syria was destructive, wasteful, even moralizing about it, saying, we have dirty hands in places like Syria and Libya. And finally, he gets attacked for that, Russia, all these things that are clearly intended to constrain his ability to, to change policy, on these various fronts. As he pushes towards these policy changes, we're seeing this outcry again. You talk about Tom Friedman. This isn't some guy writing for the Inquirer. This is one of the foremost people at the New York Times. Washington Post the same. And all of
this
that.
Is congressmen. This is,
right.
Former officials. And, they all went quiet, and they most of them openly applauded when he did these one-off strikes
right.
on the Syrian airbase where Russians were stationed that he claimed was in response to the, weapons of mass destruction use again, this old pretext. But the attacks didn't go any further than that.
Right.
And then we saw a few such incidences, and it was unclear whether it came from the Pentagon or from his office
right.
in southeast Syria around this Al-Tanf base that is established
right.
there. But when that base was completely outmaneuvered and cut off, and it was effectively useless without openly challenging the Syrian military, then the attacks on the Syrian military in that area dropped off as well.
Right.
So now it seems they've given up on arming the rebels. It seems that they've given up on the partition of East Syria. What they are doubling down on is support of the Kurds, the
right.
so-called Syrian Democratic Forces. And Turkey's very upset that they're getting more weapons and heavy weapons and more funding. And the U.S. has now opened 10 military bases, including at least 3 air bases, all in this little corner of northwest Syria that is under Kurdish control. And Russia, at the moment, they don't really have a problem with this.
Right.
And I think they see this as a way that the U.S. can gain some face, have a little bit of leverage in negotiations, be seen to be a part of it, and, you know, declare victory, a joint victory over ISIS, the U.S.-backed Kurdish SDF,
right,
along with the Syrian government and the Russians, you know, and the rest of the way.
And most
everyone
importantly,
can, then the U.S. can go home.
That's right. And most importantly, some rational, sane policy of peace for the people of Syria, so they
Syria,
can rebuild.
Yeah. There will be some negotiated settlement. There will be some power devolved away from Damascus. There will be elections, but it won't be regime change,
right,
and it won't be partition.
And we got to stop there, Mark. Thank you very much. Pleasure as always.
Yep.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.